something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way, and God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah! We're living on the edge.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. Here's your host.
Well, this is a important week in America. We're losing a lot of people. Colin Powell just passed away as a result of complications from COVID. General Colin Powell, who turned left years ago, and, you know, God rest his soul, but I don't think he left this earth on the best, on the best, what would you say, on the best grounds with his creator, because he turned left, and that's not a good thing. I'm David Masters. Alan Masters is working this week in preparation for the reckoning that begins on Thursday of this week. And it's important because it's going to be a life-changing event. You'll be able to probably see it on one of our streaming devices, whatever it may be, YouTube or Facebook. Our next reckoning, by the way, if you want to get ready for it, it will be scheduled sometime in January. So that's yet to be determined what the date is, but if you're interested, just keep going to FHU.com and you'll find out more about what it's going to be. That's FHU.com for the next reckoning. Now, I want to do something today a little different, a little philosophical, because the world that we live in now is so challenged by the madness of our time. I've never seen anything like this ever. I mean, I've seen crazy stuff. You know, I thought Bill Clinton was sort of the Antichrist. I thought Obama, I call him Obama. You know what I'm talking about. I thought he was the Antichrist. Maybe I was halfway right about both those, but I think that what we got now sitting in the Oval Office is a real Antichrist. And because of that, I think it's important to get very deep down into what protects us from that dark entity. And, you know, on that note, Jordan Peterson, I was looking for content for the show this week, and I stumbled onto this. And I honestly have to tell you that I also was moved to tears. And I don't know if you will be when you hear this, but it is one of the most profound things. He is not a Christian. He is a clinical psychologist. One of the most brilliant people of our time, my opinion. And he's in an interview with somebody, and he's talking about mythology. And I can deconstruct this a little bit more after you hear this clip, Clip J.
This particular critic that I've been reading said, well, that doesn't differentiate Christ much from a whole sequence of dying and resurrecting mythological gods. And of course, people have made that claim in comparative religion. Joseph Campbell did that, and Jung to a lesser degree, I would say, but Campbell did that. But the difference, and C.S. Lewis pointed this out as well, the difference between those mythological gods and Christ was that there's a historical representation of his existence as well. Now, you can debate whether or not that's genuine. You can debate about whether or not he actually lived and whether there's credible objective evidence for that. But it doesn't matter in some sense because this, well, it does, but there's a sense in which it doesn't matter because there's still a historical story. And so what you have in the figure of Christ is an actual person who actually lived plus a myth. And in some sense, Christ is the union of those two things. The problem is I probably believe that, but I don't know. Okay. I'm amazed at my own belief and I don't understand it. Like, because I've seen sometimes the objective world and the narrative world touch. You know, that's Jungian synchronicity. And I've seen that many times in my own life. And so in some sense, I believe it's undeniable. You know, we have a narrative sense of the world. For me, that's been the world of morality. That's the world that tells us how to act. It's real. Like, we treat it like it's real. It's not the objective world. But the narrative and the objective world touch. And the ultimate example of that, in principle, is supposed to be Christ. But I don't know what to... that seems to me oddly plausible.
Yeah.
But I still don't know what to make of it. It's too, and partly because it's too terrifying a reality to fully believe. I don't even know what would happen to you if you fully believed it.
If you believed in the story of Christ, or if you believed that history and, let's say, the narrative meet, let's say.
Both, I think. I think you, because when you believe that, you buy both those stories. You believe that the narrative and the objective can actually touch.
I think that's so profound, and there's so many reasons why, but they're discussing myth. Now, the definition of myth in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary is usually traditional story, ostensibly historical events, that serves to unfold part of the worldview of a people or explain a practiced belief or natural phenomenon. The main characters in the myths are usually non-human, such as gods, demigods, and other supernatural figures, but Jordan Peterson is being drawn, and that's an important word. He's being drawn like a tractor beam of truth is drawing him to the reality of Jesus Christ, which I think is so powerfully meaningful. He actually cried that in that moment where he was facing the potential reality that Christ was not just a myth, not just a folk story, not just a Middle Eastern, superhero story. It is absolutely and completely real. And when he says that it's so terrifying that myth and reality touch objectively, what it means is that there is this supernatural being that was resurrected from the dead and that he is the savior of mankind. And that is something that a psychologist, he's having to face this incredible reality that God is real, that his son Jesus Christ is real. And to me, that is one of the most significant things from a man of his influence I've ever heard, that he cried in that moment as he contemplated the absolute truth of the Son of God. I think that's just absolutely amazing to me. Okay, so I'm going to intersperse this with some clips of my father, my dad, Roy Masters, who passed away just before my birthday, April 22nd of this year. And in this clip, he's talking about how thoughts can influence people from a distance. And I'd never heard this story before, so I'm going to share that with you today. Go ahead.
It's the way you look, but mostly it's what you are. If you're a bully, you send out signals. But if you're a noble person and with inner strength, then also you have an aura around you that has messages written in it. Fortune tellers are very good at reading the aura, the signal strength around a human being. It translates into thoughts. You can actually transmit thoughts to people just by standing next to them. Okay. You can transmit belief, fear, anxiety.
Speaking of spiritual.
Well, that's what I mean, spiritually, if you're a good person.
A thousand miles away.
1,000 miles away, yes. But my father did it to me when he died. I was 80 miles away, and I had a dream he died. Mm-hmm. And he came to me in my dream. And the headmaster, when I was at boarding school, he called me to his study, and he said, I have some news for you. I said, I know. I cried all the way home on the train.
Oh, yeah.
I was only 12.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he came to me, and he came. Yes, you can influence people thousands of miles away. Yes, you can.
Okay,
especially if you're connected to them, especially if you have a bond to them.
So I thought that was so interesting. I'd never heard my dad talk about it. Now, and we're looking at a realm of spiritual dimension, which is all-encompassing. So the spiritual world and the actual world do literally meld together. And for somebody like Jordan Peterson, that was a revelation for him, and he thought it was, in a sense, terrifying, because what it does is Jesus Christ was an iconoclast. He destroyed illusions. And the illusion that you and your body are two completely separate things, that illusion must be destroyed, because what you do from within, your spiritual self, affects your outer life. That's all that it means. Yes, you are. You have a soul, and you have a consciousness. And so we're going to delve more into this in this show today. I've got more Jordan Peterson. I've got a lot more of my dad. And I've got some interesting stuff from the weekend. But I think the metaphysical aspect of it, again, is really where we're going to go. So, again, the reckoning starts on Thursday of this week. Alan Masters is out there taking care of all of the necessary preparations, and we look forward to hearing from you. FHU.com if you're interested in finding out more. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio.
It's your first day at work and you meet a new colleague. You've never met this person before, yet you have a positive sense you can't quite explain. Perhaps you're visiting a place for the first time and there's a magnetic feeling guiding you toward your destination. This is what many describe as intuition, an unexpected sixth sense about a situation or person. Often, intuitions pass unnoticed but play a key role in our everyday lives. The concept of intuition is often wrapped in mystery. Is it an expansion of spirituality? Well, from a scientific perspective, it has to do with your higher self. In fact, intuition is the invisible bridge between our conscious and unconscious minds. It involves information that you're not conscious of, and highly intuitive people gain insight without a known logical or rational process. In Roy Masters' book, Cure Stress at FHU.com, you will learn to remain calm and patient in the face of extreme stress, confusion, and cruelty. Expand your intuition and discover your true identity. Read Roy Masters' book, Cure Stress, at FHU.com.
How would you like to support the work of Roy Masters and the Foundation of Human Understanding? Well, the best way to do that is to get a web subscription. A web subscription allows you to log in and get the best that the FHU has to offer online. Exclusive web subscription includes AdviceLine radio program archive downloads, over 6 hours of video programs, over 20 popular audio programs valued at $200, New Insights newsletter PDF plus back issues, more than 40 insightful articles, special offers, discounts, and features. A yearly subscription is $120, and it's only $12 a month. Visit the website FHU.com and get your FHU web subscription today. That's FHU.com. If you've been helped by Roy Masters, please support him so that others might discover his message too. The web subscription is one way that you can do that. Again, visit FHU.com and order the FHU web subscription at FHU.com.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. Here's your host.
You are not just flesh and blood. You are spirituality and a combination of the body that you live in. And the reason why life is challenging and difficult so often is because the two are mingled together. So what do you do? You know, as a man thinketh, as the Bible says. Well, your thoughts are also influenced by the outside world. And this is why when I talk about how, you know, the mind has no firewall, it means that whatever is potentially allowed in, whatever you might be exposed to from the time you're born, you know, you learn how to speak. You learn how to function within a societal realm. You learn everything from taking the cues from the outside world. You don't think that that has an effect on your eternal soul? I'm absolutely sure it does. And what you also have, though, is you have the capacity to go beyond it, to rise above it, to choose differently, to be an entirely different person than your environment or your culture has compelled you to be. And it really wasn't anything any of us had a choice in, especially initially in our upbringing. You know, the people we were surrounded with, the schooling we had, we didn't have any sense of a choice because that's just what we had. You know, it's like a fish has no choice about what water it's born in. You know, if you're a freshwater fish or wherever. So I'm just saying, I want you to start thinking about this because there is a way to change everything. It is called being objective. Because if you're not objective, you are subjective. This is absolutely just fundamental. This is human awareness 101. Objective versus subjective. Now, in the next Jordan Peterson, he has a dream about Jesus. And you have to listen closely because he is taking an intellectual approach to a spiritual topic. But again, the Spirit itself is working with this man, in my opinion. I think he's one of the greatest thinkers of our time. And just pay attention, and I'll try to deconstruct it. Go ahead.
I had a dream once, and I'm speaking psychologically here, not theologically. I had a dream once. I was in the cemetery of an old church, an old cathedral, surrounded by the graves, and there were indentations in the grounds where all the graves were, and all of a sudden the graves started to open, and it was a graveyard where great people, great men of the past had been buried, and so grave opened, and an armed king stood up, and then another grave opened, and another armed king stood up, and this happened all around me, and these were very formidable figures, right? They were the great heroes of the past. And after a number of them appeared on the scene, they looked around and saw each other. And being warrior types, they immediately started to fight. And the question is, what stops the great kings of the past from fighting? And I had a revelation after the dream. I can't remember if it was part of it, but yes, it was part of the dream. They all bowed down to the figure of Christ, I thought. And then I woke up and I thought, what in the world does that dream mean? What in the world could that possibly mean? And then I understood it. I understood that if you have 20 kings, let's say, and you took the thing that was most king-like about each of them, and then you combined it into a single figure, then you'd get a single figure of transcendent heroism, of transcendent good. And it's a tenet of the Jungian school of psychology, let's say, that figure of transcendent good is symbolized by the image of Christ. And the purpose of that image is so that even the tyrannical king has someone to bend his knee to. And that's absolutely vital. I mean, you don't have to approach it from a religious perspective, although you inevitably do, because when you speak of things at this level, that's what happens. But you need an image of the transcendent embodied good to serve as something that unites the great tyrants of the past. It's something like that. It's an emergent vision of embodied unity. And it's a psychological necessity. It's a sociological necessity. And I think it bears very strongly on the question about why is it that people matter. It's the classic Western answer to that, the Judeo-Christian answer to that, is because you have a spark of divinity within you, and that divinity is a reflection of this transcendent good, and it's obligatory for me to recognize that in you and vice versa if we're going to inhabit the same territory without mayhem, peacefully, and with the ability to cooperate. Now, you might say, well, the mere fact that a transcendent image is necessary as a uniting figure doesn't prove the reality of that image. But I would say, well, yes, but it doesn't disprove it, and it strongly hints at something more profound, especially when you also ally it with the observation that the encounter with something truly admirable produces the instinct of awe. And that's not a rational instinct. It's an irrational instinct, but it's a marker that you're in the presence of something greater than yourself. And it's not something that you have voluntary control over. It's something that overtakes you. And it could easily be a reflection of the truth. Now, you can make a biologically reductionistic argument about that, but it starts to become extraordinarily difficult because you enter into the realm where these transcendent experiences of religious significance and awe are a phenomenological and psychological reality. And it's not easy to explain why that's the case.
I have to say, this is, again, more profound every time I hear it. The first cue that he was given is that you have to have a king of kings. See, the dream was showing him that if you have 20 kings and that there's some spiritual essence in each one of them that gives them a certain degree of greatness, and then they start conflicting with each other. If you take what is the most noble of all things, and that is embodied in Christ, that is something that all of those kings would ultimately bow their knee to. And so Christ is the King of all kings. And that's something that you all have to actually embrace, because regardless of the conditions of our life right now and how horrifying things are, and I mean, things are really, really horrifying today around the world. The oppression of good and basic people who just want to live their lives by monstrous people. The King of Kings will ultimately prevail and will ultimately lead us out of this bondage. And there's more, because what he's doing is he's actually being dragged consciously toward the truth that sets him free. He's freer and freer and freer all the time, as you will be, as you accept this greater truth. All right. Again, The Reckoning, starting on Thursday of this week. Alan Masters out preparing for the event. FHU.com if you want to find out more. I'm David Masters. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. We'll be right back.
Induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. They have created a repressive society, and we are their unwitting accomplices. Their intention to rule rests with the annihilation of consciousness. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent. We understand they are safe as long as they are not discovered. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio with David and Alan Masters.
Yes, the King of Kings is coming, and he's going to free the slaves, no doubt in my mind. It could happen right now, in this very day. Could happen to you. Once you understand the principle, what Jordan Peterson was saying also was that if we are all going to live together without chaos and insanity, we have to have this central figure, because that central figure is what gives us the ability to see each other as humans. And this is, he was answering the question, well, why do people matter? Well, because we all have a spark of the divine in us, every single human being, until it is snuffed out by whatever force, by whatever darkness, by whatever evil takes it from you. The spark of the divine is in every human being, and that spark of divine can respond to the King of Kings and thus be freed. Now, I'm going on to my dad, Roy Masters, again, because he takes a caller, and it's a young man who wants to disagree with him. Again, this goes back to some clips I played a couple of weeks ago about him complaining about Americans being weak. So the young man calls to take issue with him. And the information that comes out of this is very interesting to me, and I think you'll find it interesting too. Go ahead and play it.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing? I understand you have a disagreement. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, the one thing I kind of... You said that if the generation we have now really couldn't handle the amount of casualties, or you're making reference to the 3,000 deaths in Iraq threshold as opposed to the 30,000 we lost in a day.
Yeah, well, you can make the point, that point, and probably wouldn't have any disagreement with whatever you want to say about it. But I was just saying we have a demoralized generation.
I think we have a more jaded generation.
Yeah, all right.
Well, that's the same thing.
It's a different name for the same thing. I wouldn't argue with that. Jaded is okay with me. The word jaded is weakened.
But couldn't we agree that that's our government's fault? I mean, is it? For me, when I've grown up, what I've been taught is that the government should be there for the big things. They should build the roads. They should be able to provide clean water.
Right. No, it's not the government's fault that we're jaded. It's the shadow government.
It no longer serves the people. It serves the corporations that lobby them with millions of dollars.
But I understand where you're getting, but it's not the government's fault. All the government's fault. There's a force called the left. Now, if the right...
I think it's called corruption. I think it's called greed.
Yeah, it started with the left, and yet now you've got the corporations doing the same thing. I buy all that. I'm not going to argue with it, but I want to take one particular point where the destruction of the family and, of course, the perversion of religion by the priests and the clergy. Real Christianity is not being taught in church, and real Americanism is not taught in the schools. And so
Real Christianity an extreme form of religion just like...
No. Real Christianity, true Christianity, has no rules to it. In other words, just you wouldn't expect an ant to need the Ten Commandments for ants. Ant knows how to be an ant. A human being has a choice to be a noble being or to set aside that purpose for which he was born and become a renegade and become a self-centered pig. There's been an appeal to the base nature of Americans through the media, and the left is the biggest proponent for the downfall of breaking the family, which is what happened in Europe under communism. Communism broke down the family. It attacked religion. If you understand the tenets of the left or communism, you see it's to destroy the family, so eventually you can get to rule it when you destroy the family and the father in the family. And so
I don't think communism was so much destroying the family as replacing your dependency and protection on the government.
But you're saying the same thing. If you destroy the relationship in the family, if you marginalize the father, you have the women and children.
So, interesting. Now, what he said about Christianity having no rules, I think that there are basically two rules. And those two rules are so essential, and yet they're so obviously innate. Do unto others and love one another as I have loved you, is what Jesus said. And so, but it's not really like, it's like not like a rule that's written in stone. It is the basic tenets of humanity. You know, treat each other the way you want to be treated and care about each other as I have cared about you. And how beautiful that is, because otherwise you have a technocracy, even if it's religious, right? Even if it's in the guise of being for your own good, it also complicates things terribly. And I don't think God wants a complicated life for anybody, honestly. Now, in the next clip, Roy Masters goes on to explain a little bit more about, and he actually, the young man is not focused. He doesn't quite understand where he's going, but he's challenging my dad about, because he's young, he doesn't know much yet. So here's the next part of that.
Yeah. Capitalism marginalizes the father more than ever. I mean, capitalism brought about the separation.
The only thing is, what I would like you to disagree with me, you brought me into a political debate, but what I would prefer you to argue with me is...
I apologize for that.
That's all right, because we can go on all night about the subject, and I know you're well-intentioned. I am trying to get people back to the values of our forefathers, and if we do, then the faults of capitalism and the follies of liberalism will not work, and we'll be a free people. And that's all I'm trying to do.
Can I say one last point really, really
quick? Please.
I think, and I'm speaking for my whole generation, that if we truly were called upon for greatness, whether it be war, whether it be to go to the moon, whether it be for any type of situation that would really save humanity and allow for not only the best intellectual ideas, but pretty much for the people, I think our generation would definitely raise arms, open their minds,
but
I don't think we've been challenged like that.
You are being challenged right now, but you haven't seen it. Your generation has been too self-indulgent into drugs and music. They haven't seen it. They're too self-centered.
Well,
so,
even more than drugs and music. I mean, when I was a child, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I didn't try marijuana until I was 23, and I did it for maybe like 2-3 months because it made me sick.
Yes.
And for me, it was pretty much having whatever I wanted. I think
right.
We were a spoiled generation, but I think
bad.
That that spoiling of us has also made us greedy in the aspect that the freedoms that we were told about, the securities of the, you know, the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, that we are greedy enough to say that this is our God-given right, and we do deserve it, instead of our forefathers, like my father, being more modest.
I lost you. When you say that, you sound like you're still on marijuana.
I'm sorry?
When you say that you deserve to be spoiled, if I'm getting you right.
No, we deserve to be spoiled, but we deserve to have the foundations that this country was built upon.
That's what I'm getting at.
Listen.
I like it that you called.
Well, I was actually making a comparison to the war that...
I don't really want to go there because we're going all over the place. My business isn't the war. My business is getting you strong enough to stand up and live your life the way you should live it as a citizen first, and to love what's right in your heart and learn to be noble and brave in all the little things that you do with your family and your friends and give up your selfishness. And then perhaps you'll see that there's an ever-present danger we're facing, that the young people, many young people, not all of them, because we got some wonderful young people, but not enough. You were talking about the overall view of things where we could argue forever.
So the young man, I think, was well-intentioned, but he just wasn't able to focus enough to get, you know, the kind of insight that may have helped him. But the idea here is that, you know, Americans, and this is what my dad always tried to tell people, Americans got soft somewhere. They got lazy. They became spoiled and indifferent and selfish. And because of that, we have what we have today. Now, this was from 2005. Sounds like it could have been today. But we're facing this problem of selfishness in this land. Now, people are suffering. And because of that, I think there's an uprising, like a groundswell of people sort of awakening to the truth that could ultimately set this country free again. I don't know if people are going back to church. I don't know if people are going back to their Creator and praying again and trying to find, you know, the higher values. I think a lot of people are. And then I think a lot of people aren't. I think a lot of people are going deeper into the rabbit hole. Like this crazy nut job in clip M. Go ahead.
The symbolism of the flag does not mean what it used to mean. Now I see an American flag hanging from someone's yard, or house, and I immediately assume that they're conservative right-wing lunatics. Because y'all have used the American flag as a weird representation of, like, patriotism, but, like, in this weird, intense, violently non-educated kind of way.
Violently non-educated. Really, lady? And again, look, you know that most people that are over-educated, they're taught to believe that burning the American flag is patriotism. It's the exact opposite of respecting the flag that people gave their blood and treasure for. You see, so this poor woman, I can't bash her. I could, but it wouldn't serve any purpose because she doesn't get it. She's been educated, and she looks at the rest of us who are, like, you know, not as elite as she is, and she sees burning the American flag as the highest duty. We see saluting that flag as an act of patriotism because we recognize what that flag has meant to us throughout the last hundreds of years, that the people who have given their lives, and it doesn't matter who they are, it doesn't matter if it's soldiers and first responders or nurses, anybody, the people that gave their life to defend the flag, which represents all of us, by the way, are disrespected by that person. And she thinks that that's her duty, is to disrespect us who are not like her. See what we're dealing with? We're dealing with a clash of internal civilizations that are opposing. All right. David Masters, FHU.com. My book is called How to Escape the Prison for Your Mind. Available on Amazon.com. In it is the textbook on psychopolitics called Brainwashing. The entire textbook shows you why America's gone to hell. We'll be right back with more.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Are you suffering with PTSD after being in the military? You should see what people are saying about Roy Masters online.
In my experience as a commander who mobilized and returned thousands of wartime veterans, I have seen soldiers make rapid improvement through the use of Be Still and Know. Major General George R. Harris.
Google Roy Masters PTSD. You'll see what I mean.
The Be Still and Know exercise works for me. It calms my soul, enhances my thinking, and improves my emotional regulation. I'm thankful to be a more resilient chaplain. Lieutenant Colonel Philip Pringle, Southern Baptist.
Go online and Google Roy Masters now. You'll be amazed at what you find.
I must say, on the basis of 20 years' experience, that the application of this exercise has made a significant contribution to the treatment of the great majority of those who have used it. Dr. George Hader, diplomat of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology.
You need to see what people have to say about Roy Masters online. On your computer, tablet, or even your smartphone. Go online and search for Roy Masters PTSD Military. You'll be glad you did.
There is no escaping the challenges of life. Everyone has to learn how to deal with stress. The bottom line is this: if you don't control stress, stress will control you. Go to FHU.com. That's www.fhu.com. And find out how you can control stress.
Every night I'd take a drive out into the wilderness area around here and sometimes wept because I couldn't figure out what was still wrong. What he did for me is he bore witness to everything that was already running through my mind, and through doing that, helped me delve into my past and see where things went wrong. And as the resentment has fallen away, as he says, without trying, my bad habits are disappearing.
Visit www.fhu.com. Learn a simple technique that will change the way you deal with stress. For more information, call 1-800-877-3227 or visit fhu.com.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. Here's your host.
America is rebelling. And that is a fact. It is a fact of reality that most people who have already given in to the pressure to get vaccinated have not been thinking for themselves, and therefore they have made the choice out of pressure. Now, others are standing up, and especially those who are in various positions of responsibility, whether it be hospital workers, first responders, police, military. I saw a picture of a military guy getting the jab and wearing a sign on his chest that says, "I do this with reluctance because I'm being pressured to do it." He says he's against it, but he's doing it because he doesn't want to lose his job. Now, I have Baron Baptiste with me, my good friend of many, many, many decades. Many. I'm talking 100 decades, Baron. You and I go back 1,000 years. And I want to play a clip for you, Baron, before we begin, from Alex Berenson talking to Joe Rogan about statistics from England. Listen to this.
And the best data we have comes out of the UK and Israel. And I have to keep saying this to people because they almost don't believe it. In the UK, 70%+ of the people who die now from COVID are fully vaccinated. And in Israel, that was
70%.
7 in 10 of the people. I'm going to keep saying it because nobody believes it, but the numbers are there in the government documents. Okay. They're not a secret. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not somebody saying, "Oh, I heard this from my cousin." It's in British government documents from the UK, Public Health England.
There it is. The UK, 70% of those vaccinated are the ones who are dying. Now, Baron, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be here with you, David. Always good to be with you.
Thank you. It's always good to have you. And, you know, you're going to be at the event this week, at the Reckoning, starting on Thursday of this week. We're looking forward to having you. It's going to be an amazing event. So I just wanted to put that out there. I want to talk to you about how to stand up without going insane, because there are people out there that are about to lose their minds. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, losing your mind serves no one, especially yourself and the people closest to you.
Yes.
So yeah, it takes something, you know, it takes really note in a time where there's so much pressure and to be like living inside of a pressure cooker and we're in the fire. And then those people that are given these kind of ultimatums with their livelihood? Are they going to be able to feed their families and, you know, the economy? But then the threat of losing their job with these mandates, it's more than ever, it's a time to stay present to one's center. If you lose your center and you lose inner peace, you go to pieces. It serves nothing. And it's
you go to inner pieces. Yeah. Instead of having inner peace, you go to inner pieces. And that's true.
You shatter.
It's you do.
True. You collapse in a cascade of, you know, anxiety and anguish and despair and reactivity and anger, and it serves no one. So the insanity in the outside world, all the noise, and then what does it take to rise above the noise and be clear and straightforward in what you see and how you respond? Because it's only from our center that we're able to respond, or we're respond able. Otherwise, you're a reactive mess, just a big old mess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I add to that. When I feel pressure to do something, there's two kinds of pressure, basically. One is a time pressure. So you've got to get something done in a certain amount of time, and the pressure starts to build up to that point, and then you either do it or you don't do it. Okay. If you do it, maybe that's a good thing. If you don't do it, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. But when I feel pressure to do something that I, in my gut, says something says to me, don't do it, then I start to begin to feel like, well, when I have to make that decision, or don't I have to make that decision? And if I feel very strongly, intuitively, that it's something that I cannot do, then nothing else matters but that intuitive sense that I have. Because I believe, and I've read studies on this, Baron, that say that your intuitive sense of things, your gut level sense of things, is usually your best, like, gut check thing for you. You know what I'm saying? It's usually the best thing for you in the long run. And many people who don't listen to that gut check intuitive thing end up regretting not listening to it. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's an actual brain in the belly. And that brain.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding.
Yeah, that brain is smart. Yeah, that brain is smarter than we are, in a sense. We are meaning what the senses may, you know, what we see, what we hear, what's the obvious. There's something in that brain, in the belly, that when listened to, leads you. And maybe it's God's voice. I don't know, but it's something that's different than the outer voice and pressure of obligation. You know, David, at a certain point in my life, I got to a decision where I'm not going to do anything under obligation.
I love that.
If there's some kind of pressure, outer pressure of obligation, I'm not going to do it. Now, if there's some kind of obligation, you know, obligation different than responsibility. I may be responsible to do certain things and I need to do those things, but I'm not going to do things out of some kind of obligation, external obligation. And maybe there's some kind of external obligation.
All right.
And I've learned to, like,
it's
turn
a great
that obligation
point.
Into, yeah.
Yeah, we got to take a quick break here.
Okay.
Actually, we're starting the next hour, so you're going to stay with me. For the entire next hour, we're going to plumb the depths of a lot of these current issues that are driving everybody crazy. And we'll continue with that thought, the obligation versus the responsibility. I love that. Baron Baptiste, David Masters, david@fhu.com, david@fhu.com. And if you are interested, go to fhu.com and find out about The Reckoning. Baron will be there, and so will I. We'll be right back with more.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. We'll be right back.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. And God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. We're living on the edge.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. Here's your host.
Well, we are facing a crisis every day, a new one, from a failed leadership. I don't even call it leadership. I call it misleadership. There are a bunch of misleaders, and they always were. And for those of you who have guilt about it, thank God. Thank God you feel guilty for putting the leadership or the misleadership in this country in power. And for those of you who don't feel guilty, I pity you. God help you. Because look at what you've done to this greatest country in the history of the world. All right. You can always come over and, you know, join the legions of reason and logic and common sense. You can come over anytime you're ready. You just have to repent a little bit and say, I'm sorry I made this mistake. And this goes back to what we were talking about in the first, at the end of the first hour, Baron Baptiste, my good friend, and going to be at the event coming up on Thursday. It's called The Reckoning. I'm going to be there too. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers. But Baron, you had said obligation, you don't do anything and you can't. But if it's an issue of responsibility, that's entirely different. Please continue to elaborate on that.
Yeah, well, at a certain point in my life, I saw I was acting out of obligation, out of external pressure. And that was a source of huge stress. And being only able to, I had to see I was only able to actually get things done if there was some kind of external pressure or obligation. At a certain point, I just made the decision, I'm not going to do anything out of obligation. It was a game changer. It changed, actually, my whole life opened up. Stress dropped away. I had a much clearer and cleaner relationship to my responsibilities in life. And still, though, I'll see something starts occurring like an obligation, or there's some external obligation, an outer obligation, and I'll just take a look at it. I'll notice, wait, Baron, stop, pause, notice, is this an obligation that I'm in reaction to, or is it actually a responsibility, something that I'm actually committed to, but it's appearing as some kind of pressure or overwhelm. And the moment I notice that, it disappears. And then I do the thing, or I don't. But if I'm going to do it, it's out of a responsibility, out of commitment, which is very different than doing something out of obligation.
It's totally right. And just to add to that idea, I was just getting a flash of the word expectations. And expectations are very dangerous because, and I'll give you a perfect example. I did the same thing. I said, obligation sucks. I don't care for it. I'm going to discard it from my life. Then I find that I want to do things without obligation. In other words, I have the instinct or the impulse to do something, a good thing for a good reason. So when certain Hallmark holidays come around, whether it's, you know, Valentine's Day or whatever, everybody begins to feel this obligation. Christmas is coming up, Thanksgiving, being around family. And there's all this feeling of obligation, like, well, I got to go. I got to, you know, it's my family. But, you know, at the same time, you may have terrible conflicts with siblings and parents and in-laws and God knows what. And so there is no law in the universe that says that you have to honor any kind of obligation that goes so deeply against your grain, your gut. Which I love the idea that you told me that. And I, by the way, I read a book, and I'm still reading it, called The Body Has a Mind of Its Own. And so absolutely correct. The gut level is there to inform certain parts of our brain that don't usually connect, you know, with those feelings. So there are times where I will do things randomly at the time that I feel that it's the right thing to do. And I love to surprise people. I like to give somebody something when they're not expecting it, because to me, it means more, right? When you do something, when somebody isn't in a state of expectation, there's more value to it for me, because I'm the one that's doing the giving. So if I'm going to do something
and especially something that affects my body this deeply, such as taking an unproven vaccine, and actually it's now being proven to kill people. Okay, now if you want to take it, good luck. But now I want to play a clip for you, Baron, and this is how I think we stand up to people who are trying to force us into capitulation through obligation. Play the clip.
Just think of Biden. He says, don't make the vaccines divisive. Yeah. Don't make the vaccines divisive. You are trying to take people's jobs away over this issue. You are trying to plunge people into destitution. You are taking away their livelihoods. Nobody else is doing that. You are the one that's being divisive about this. To say to a police officer who's been working this whole time, or a nurse or a firefighter, that now they lose their job? Way before there was any vaccines and we even knew what the heck was going on with, go back to March, April 2020. There's so much unknowns. Those guys had to answer the call. Patient comes in, the nurses are there caring for him. Someone calls 911, the police and the fire, they're there. And they had to put themselves on there. And now you're going to toss them aside? So he is the one that's being divisive on this. We believe people should be able to make their own decisions.
Amen. That was Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, standing up to Joe Biden, the Antichrist, in my opinion. But I'm saying DeSantis actually understands how to push back without being angry, like we were talking about. Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, exactly. Just stand up and do what's right in your heart, in your belly, that belly, in your gut.
Yes.
Trust it. And it's called living by faith. Like, if you want to get the vaccine, do it. And though, don't do it out of obligation, out of pressure. And I think where a lot of people get confronted is they're afraid of losing things, afraid of losing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People are addicted to their cars, their houses, their toys, their money. But are you being bought, or are you selling out on yourself? I mean, that's the question. Look, if you want to get the vaccine, you've done your research, and you do it. And don't do it by any kind of obligation or even a fear. I mean, it's really a place to check. Are you afraid of losing stuff? Because if you're acting out of a fear of losing stuff, you may be selling out on yourself. And
the Bible says this, Baron. It says, what does it profit a person to gain the whole world but lose their soul?
Yeah. You sell it on your dignity. You sell it on your own inner integrity. You sell it on your self. And,
all right,
and that undermines your confidence. And it's just more the spiral of, you know, one sellout leading into the next.
Wait a minute. Wait. Stop right there, because you made an important point. And I don't want to undervalue what you just said. I don't want to miss it. You undermine your own confidence. The word confidence means with knowing. And so you undermine yourself in the sense that you lose your ability to intuit and see things from a point of view which is different from the ones who are pressuring you, because confidence, confideo, with knowing, makes you able to make different decisions. So when you lose that, then you are dependent upon the external pressures of the herd. Would you agree?
Yeah, going along to get along and going along to, along with the sea of all the same kind of groupthink, the same, but really to step out of that and into autonomy, like true autonomy, and to be able to think for yourself, act for yourself, and where you're free to be and free to act. And that may be in the face of outside forces trying to control. But
almost
can you
always
keep your freedom?
Yes.
You
almost
know,
always. Yeah.
Yeah, there was the philosopher, not philosopher, he's like a psychiatrist, Viktor Frankl.
I love him.
He wrote the book, author, Man's Search for Meaning. And
yes,
you know, he said something in there about the space between stimulus and response. And in that space between stimulus and response is freedom. It's a free domain.
Stop right there. Don't say another word, because we've got to take a break. I want to hear more of this. I don't want you to come up to that brick wall of the break, but we have to. The space between... What? Say it again real quick. The space...
The space between stimulus and response. That
there it is.
A free domain. Freedom.
That's beautiful. That's so powerful. When we come back, we're going to continue this. It is Perilous World Radio. Baron Baptiste will be at our Reckoning event on Thursday through the weekend. You don't want to miss this. FHU.com. Join us in the next segment.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. We'll be right back.
At FHU.com, you can change how you react to stress and improve your life with a 7-minute meditation. If you could learn the secret of how to control your responses, how to find that God-given switch in your mind, which would allow you to energize and motivate yourself, you would never again feel conflict, guilt, fear, or depression. If you're willing to be shown how you can become the person you were created to be, allow the Foundation of Human Understanding to introduce you to a simple exercise that will prove to you, through your own experience, that control over yourself without unbearable suppression is not only possible, but vital to your health, to your future happiness, and to your very existence.
What do you see? Surely there's little twinkles of light, different shapes moving across the screen of your mind, is that so? Something magical happens when you observe those little pixels crossing the screen of your mind. It has all different colors, little sparkles. This is programming from within. Just be aware of them. And you will find that you are in a refuge, meaning you can hear my voice, but you've left your thoughts behind. That's very important. This is what's happening.
Here's what people are saying about the 7-minute meditation. Physicians are taught to treat symptoms. These exercises have the capacity to resolve the root of the symptom. Dr. Rick Titus, MD, CCFP. Time and time again, the efficacy of the teachings and practices in people of varying emotional maladies. Dr. Ron Carlson, clinical psychologist. Go to FHU.com and listen to the 7-minute meditation. It will change your entire life and the way you look at the world you live in. Go to FHU.com and listen to the 7-minute meditation. That's FHU.com.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. Here's your host.
This is my final sign-off. After 22 years of serving the citizens of the state of Washington, being asked to leave because I am dirty. Numerous fatalities, injuries, I've worked sick. We've buried lots of friends over these years. I'd like to thank you guys. I'd like to thank the citizens of Yakima County, as well as my fellow officers within the valley. Without you guys, I wouldn't have been very successful, and you've kept me safe and got me home to my family every night. Thank you for that. Wish I could say more, but this is it. So, State 1034, this is the last time you'll hear me in a State Patrol car. And Jay Inslee can kiss my ass.
Now, that was this Washington State Trooper who quit rather than take the jab. And what's happening is in police departments and fire departments, 890 firemen in Los Angeles County alone have filed a lawsuit against being forced to take the jab. And I said at the beginning of the show today, Baron, that there's a wave of people rebelling against the insanity, and it's about time. And here's one Washington State Trooper, 22-year career, saved countless lives, and he said because he's dirty, which means he's not jabbed. He won't take the jab. He's standing up for what he believes. Now, I want to go back to what you said about what Viktor Frankl said. I love Viktor Frankl. He was in a concentration camp, and he was one of the survivors, having been in there, I believe, for over 2 years when other people around him were being systematically murdered. He survived, and he came out to write some amazing material and a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And say it again for me, Baron.
Yeah, Viktor Frankl spoke to something about in the space between stimulus and response is freedom. There's a freedom to choose one's response to the stimulus. But if there's no gap, if you're not present to or aware to the gap between the stimulus and yourself, the stimulus and your response, you're in reaction. There's no freedom to choose. You're subject to whatever's coming at you, and you're in a reaction, and living reactively gets you a whole set of inner experiences and inner states, internal states, anguish, anger, stress, overwhelm, anguish, despair, hurt, anger. The experience of having lost yourself comes out of living a reactive life.
It's so profound. And I was just looking at the origin of the word emotion, because usually emotion is a stimulus that leads to a response, right? And so the word emotion originated in 1570, around there, and it means moving, stirring, agitation, from the French émotion. The old French émovio, to stir up. From the Latin émover, to move out, remove, agitate. I just got to look at it and say, well, the emotions that drive us so often to do things that are impulse driven, we don't give ourselves that essential space in between the source of the force that's moving us and the reaction itself. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's really the difference between health, one's true health, and keeping health healthy in mind, you know, in body, or not. And it's that emotion that we all have as human beings. Emotions come up, but we have them. We have emotions different than emotions having us. And in that space between stimulus and response, you can observe your emotions and you can let them go. Or you can observe an emotion, say, okay, this is valid, and have it be an energy. Like you said, the move air. It's like, yeah, to move you, but it's in the space between stimulus and response. You move into that opening.
And wait,
with
intent. Yeah, and the space between the stimulus and the response is what we would consider to be the present or the now moment, in which there are a variety of different potentials, as opposed to the stimulus causing the response, and then us being a sort of captive of the response itself. In other words, how many times, I watch Court Cam on A&E. You ever watch that, Baron?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you see these people that are in court for a thousand different reasons, and you could see that the things that stimulate, and especially, you know, the conflicts between men and women, how men and women get into these incredible conflicts. And here it is, the stimulus. Somebody says something to somebody. The man says something to the woman, or vice versa. And then they lash out at each other. And then they're in jail. And then their whole lives are ruined. And there has not been that ability to step back and create that gap and have that space and that presence of mind in that moment to look back and see, you know, it reminds me of the Sherlock Holmes movie, where he was able to sort of see ahead of time what moves he would make when he was in a conflict or in a fight. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
He saw ahead of time what the outcome would be. And I believe that in that moment between the stimulus and the response itself is that capacity to be able to actually see the future or the potential of a future that you don't want. What do you think?
Wow, I think it's pretty amazing. What's coming to mind is presence, like presence, being present in the moment with whatever's coming at you. But the presence of what is the question? If you're a Christian, let's say, and you have a commitment to love and living from love, and then is there a presence of love from which you flow and interact with the outside world. And I don't mean love like you're a doormat or you tolerate or you put up with or you ignore. I'm using love not to be confused with weakness, but a space, a place of love where love is a presence. So you may need to act with total strength and even force, yet behind it there's the presence of love.
It's so true. And of course, love, let's just put it in perspective, is the opposite of hate. In other words, whatever it is that's angry and vengeful and agitated and being moved, you move from that. And so then there's the stimulus, and then the outcome of that almost always is regrettable. So we're going to continue this now. I want to play the Jordan Peterson for you, because we've got to talk about how human beings can rise above all of this insanity. And Alan Masters is out at the Reckoning event getting ready for the weekend. Baron will be there with us. It's going to be an incredible event. FHU.com if you want more information. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. We'll be right back.
Going to sound really counterintuitive, especially if you're a parent. There's a number of studies that suggest we shouldn't be worrying too much about making white kids feel bad, because they get so much false messages about their goodness that it's actually kind of critically important for them. We also actually, and my goal as a parent is to get my kids into white guilt and beyond it as young as possible. Because adults, white adults are running around with white guilt, and we're stuck. White guilt has to happen. It's a developmental need. If you believe in equity and you live in this kind of system and you're white, you're going to hit white guilt. So in my mind, I'm like, I need my 4-year-old to experience white guilt so I can support her out of it and beyond it. And I don't want her doing it when she's 20. I want her to be well past that point.
Shut up! You're listening to Perilous World Radio with David and Alan Masters.
It's time for us to resist. They can't arrest all of us. They can't keep all of your kids home from school. They can't keep every government building closed, although I've got a long list of ones they might keep closed or might ought to keep closed. We don't have to accept the mandates, lockdowns, and harmful policies of the petty tyrants and bureaucrats. We can simply say no, not again. Nancy Pelosi, you will not arrest or stop me or anyone on my staff from doing our jobs. We have either had COVID, had the vaccine, or been offered the vaccine. We will make our own health choices. We will not show you a passport. We will not wear a mask. We will not be forced into random screenings and testings so you can continue your drunk with power reign over the Capitol. President Biden, we will not accept your agency's mandates or your reported moves towards a lockdown. No one should follow the CDC's anti-science mask mandates.
Now, this is a doctor, Dr. Rand Paul, who's also a powerful influence in government for the good. And by the way, the word guilt, you know, that in the bottom of the hour, we played the woman talking about white guilt. Just think about this word, white guilt. In Old English, guilt, G-Y-L-T, means crime, sin, moral defect, failure of duty, or it means to pay for or debt. Hey, you know what? I have no white guilt. I don't have any white guilt. As a matter of fact, I have ancestors that are American Indian. I'm 1/8 Creek Indian. I have no guilt. My ancestors did nothing to hurt anybody. They were the people that were hurt, and I don't want people to feel guilty. Anyway, Baron, welcome back to the show. And I want to go into this audio of Jordan Peterson, because I think it's important. The white guilt aspect of everything is an absolute lie. It's a pure manipulation. It's a stimulus designed to make people go absolutely out of their minds if their skin is a certain color, which is racism in and of itself. So let us play for you something that I was very moved by, with Jordan Peterson having an interview with a man talking about myth. And, of course, myth is a part of the story of our culture and our history. And he's trying to make a point about other mythologies compared to Jesus Christ. Listen to this.
This particular critic that I've been reading said, well, that doesn't differentiate Christ much from a whole sequence of dying and resurrecting mythological gods. And, of course, people have made that claim in comparative religion. Joseph Campbell did that, and Jung to a lesser degree, I would say, but Campbell did that. But the difference, and C.S. Lewis pointed this out as well, the difference between those mythological gods and Christ was that there's a historical representation of his existence as well. Now, you can debate whether or not that's genuine. You can debate about whether or not he actually lived and whether there's credible objective evidence for that. But it doesn't matter in some sense because this, well, it does, but there's a sense in which it doesn't matter because there's still a historical story. And so what you have in the figure of Christ is an actual person who actually lived plus a myth. And in some sense, Christ is the union of those two things. The problem is I probably believe that, but I don't know. Okay. I'm amazed at my own belief and I don't understand it. Like, because I've seen sometimes the objective world and the narrative world touch. You know, that's Jungian synchronicity. And I've seen that many times in my own life. And so in some sense, I believe it's undeniable. You know, we have a narrative sense of the world. For me, that's been the world of morality. That's the world that tells us how to act. It's real. Like, we treat it like it's real. It's not the objective world. But the narrative and the objective world touch. And the ultimate example of that, in principle, is supposed to be Christ. But I don't know what to... that seems to me oddly plausible.
Yeah.
But I still don't know what to make of it. It's too, partly because it's too terrifying a reality to fully believe. I don't even know what would happen to you if you fully believed it.
If you believed in the story of Christ, or if you believed that history and, let's say, the narrative meet, let's
both, say. I think. I think you, because when you believe that, you buy both those stories. You believe that the narrative and the objective can actually touch.
It's so profound, Baron, and I just want to, I was thinking about the words that he used, the narrative world, a tale, a story, a connected account of the particulars of an event or series of incidents. So, and he's saying he believes it, and he doesn't even believe, he doesn't even understand how he believes it. But see, he's being drawn toward the truth that sets him free, and that, so anyway, I want to hear your thoughts on that.
What is he talking to or referring to when he says the narrowing of
narrative,
the objective? Yeah.
Right. So the narrative is a story and the objective is the reality that there is, that Christ lived, that he was God's son, that he was resurrected from the dead, and that he was able to raise the dead, and all of the amazing, miraculous things that he was able to do as a human being representing his Father who was in heaven. And so he cries in that moment where he's expressing that he's amazed at his own belief in it because he's an intellectual. He doesn't actually, he's not a Christian, but he's being drawn to Christianity.
Yeah, you know, it's, and he's being impacted by it. He's coming in through the intellectual gate,
yes,
the intellectual door, and it's landing on him.
Yes.
Either way, the objective or the narrative, it's landing on him. And something's transforming within him, right there in the recording.
In that moment,
In that moment, there's a transformation. If you're half awake, you can hear it. You hear the inner transformation happening to him, and there's the opportunity for each of us, myself, to wow. Through that, it's like, who am I to be complaining if I look at the life of Christ and what they put him through, how they, you know, talk about cancel culture, how they lied about him. They made up lies and stories about him. They, you know, tortured him. They chased him. They crucified him. And he forgave them. He like, forgive them, Father. They don't have the foggiest idea of what they're doing. They're deceived, but yet, in the compassion in that, but yet, who would I be to see what they've done to him? Like, who am I to, you know, blame or fault or be angry at people who hate me or try to cancel me or try to do harm to me? It's like the narrative and the objective reality of his life, the life of Jesus, was right there. Wow. It's like, well, if they did all those terrible things to him, who am I who to complain about anything that I have, because I have really a pretty blessed life?
Yeah, I was actually, when I saw that happen in front of my own eyes, I was also moved to tears, because I thought, you know, we see how many people claim Christianity. Like, you know, they have a, I don't know, they walk around with a you know, wearing their religion on their sleeve, which is better than not, okay? It's better than not having a belief about Christ. But here's a man who is a powerful intellectual, whose intellect is being overcome by pure reason, by objectivity. And I'm looking at the meaning of the word objectivity. It means impersonal or unbiased. And so he's not coming to it with any kind of agenda. He's coming to it through being pulled over into reality. And to me, this is the most powerful kind of person, because he's a clinical psychologist. You know who Dr. Jordan Peterson is. He has written a number of books, and each one of his books is based on morality and reason and logic. But see, what happens is, as we escape the biases that we've been conditioned to believe, we are all subject, we're all slaves of our environment, to be honest with you. That's what culture is all about. Everybody that's born into a culture is a subject to that culture. It's almost like the culture is their king. And then there is the King of Kings, who frees you from that cultural influence, from everything that you've been told and everything that you have believed about who you are in relationship to that world, your parents, your friends, your culture, you know, everything, the social media, the cancel culture. It doesn't matter, because there's something that is above that. And that's where we all should be going, because if we don't go there, then we're going to have nothing but societal conflicts until there's nobody left. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, there's culture and everything we're living in now. What culture is in opposition to the spiritual. And to be able to rise above culture and to see culture, the culture we live in, is not working for human beings. The culture we live in is in opposition to civilization, to being a civil human being, to be like autonomous, to be free, to be at peace, have peace of mind, and to have a kind of a power that's given from God and led by that. And it's very different than culture. Culture is distraction, and it becomes something that's so sensual and sense-based that it becomes senseless. We actually lose our senses. We lose our sensibility.
Yes,
we lose
absolutely.
Our dignity.
We have to take a quick break again. We are up against that break wall that slows us down to a complete halt. Baron Baptiste will be at the Reckoning beginning Thursday of this week. And I will be there too. For more information, it's FHU.com. Our next Reckoning will be sometime in January. So if you didn't make it to this one, make plans to make it to the January Reckoning. And it's going to be called Man Up. Interesting topic. All right. We'll take a break and we'll be right back with more. Perilous World Radio, David at FHU.com.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. We'll be right back.
And I know that a lot of people are listening, because I was, and I was really hurting, and I just turned on the radio, and it really helped me just, like, have peace at night. But I feel like I had to call it, but it's honest, and it's real, and people need to hear the truth. And I have it sugarcoated.
Are you ready to stop struggling with your problems?
Every night I take a drive out into the wilderness area around here and sometimes wept because I couldn't figure out what was still wrong. And as the resentment has fallen away, as he says, without trying, my bad habits are disappearing.
Are you ready to stop being so emotional and angry and upset all the time?
The drinking's gone. The drugging is gone. I quit smoking 5 months ago, and I don't even care about it anymore. It's amazing. I've lost 15 pounds in the last 2 months, and I'm running again. And it's all without saying I have to do it. It just happens.
These are the words of people whose lives have changed radically because they've discovered how to gain control over their negative emotions.
We're always reaching out for an answer, and we're not reaching in. I found that in being still, it's so effortless that we're so used to our own will, we don't see it.
These people have discovered that stress itself really isn't the problem. It's the way we react to it. Learn how to deal with stress properly.
Thank you. Since I listen to you regularly, I went from 300 pounds to 140. Before that, I quit being promiscuous. I gave up pot. I gave up going to bars. Married. Oh, we are still married almost 30 years. Listening to you, I got so much better as the years passed. Our daughters never did pot, never got drunk, never were promiscuous. Both are married. One to a soldier, one to a Marine. We're that blessed thanks to you waking just one of the parents up.
Visit FHU.com. And download Be Still and Know, a simple concentration exercise that will change your life. Visit FHU.com.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio. Here's your host.
Well, for those of us who are on the journey toward actual reality, actual consciousness, not the artificial, externally induced stuff, no matter what source it may come from, but on the journey to reality itself, there is this line of delineation. It's like an event horizon. And one of the reasons why I like the Matrix movies so much is that they pose these important questions. And I want to play this clip for you, Baron, from The Matrix, and then we'll talk about it. Play the clip.
Do you believe in fate, Neo?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't like the idea that I'm not in control of my life.
I know exactly what you mean. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad.
There it is right there. There's something in us that are moving toward actual reality, whatever that may be, in the now present, and we don't feel comfortable unless we're moving in that direction. I'd love for you to address that, Baron.
Yeah, wow. That's profound. It brings to mind, the Bible talks about the voice in the wilderness and the hound of heaven. And there's something within us, and we don't know, we just see the world is backwards. The world doesn't make sense. People are nuts. and we don't know how to put it all together, but it doesn't match up. Like what we see and what our senses reveal don't match up to something within us that just knows there's something wrong out in the world. And then, wow, if I get present to, okay, something's wrong in the world, I don't have to have that guide me anymore, that something's wrong. I can right there just getting present to something's wrong and acknowledging something's wrong, something's weird. And something's creepy, something's off. Maybe it's someone, some situation, or the world in general. But right there, the recognition that, yeah, I'm not crazy. The world is. Right in there, is a connection to that splinter that they spoke to in that recording from the Matrix. Right there, the acknowledgement, something's weird, but you don't have to be led by something's wrong, but you actually take the source of your life from what's right and what's right from above. And you move and breathe and have your being from that center of what's right and be guided and taking the higher call at each step.
That's so insightful the way you put that. And this is the reason, though, why, you know, I am personally always on my quest to understand that splinter in my own mind. It doesn't matter what happens on the outside world. Honestly, you look at the world and you say, like you said, it's nuts. People are crazy. There's no place, there's no sanctuary except your mind. And if your mind isn't your sanctuary, then you're basically screwed, because then the world is constantly battering down your security gate and rushing in and making you feel things that you don't want to feel. So the question for the last few minutes is, how do we get to that place, from your point of view, how do we get to that place where we are able to erect that barrier and keep those influences from making us nuts?
Yeah, it's really true. I wonder, you know, as you're speaking about the mind, is there peace in mind, or is it actually the peace we're looking for is outside of the mind, in God's mind, so to speak? Like, there's God's mind, which is spirit, and then there's my mind, which is my soul. But is my peace of mind actually from a higher mind, which is outside of my mind? My mind is just chattering away all day long. My mind is full of thoughts and images and voices, and all day long, from the moment I wake up till the night, until I go to bed at night. Is there something outside of my mind, like a higher mind, that actually is true peace of mind, but it's peace from mind with God, different than peace in my mind from God, away from God, outside of God, something,
you know,
like that.
That's I like that. I like that. And the way I would look at it is this, is that I have two laptops in front of me. I do a lot of work all day long looking for information and stories. But when I look for the meaning of a word, it's because I want understanding. What does that word mean? Now, I could look for anything else. I could look at all kinds of garbage like kids do on their smartphones. I have a 17-year-old son who has constant car videos playing, and he's got the constant chatter of these people that are talking about, you know, all these issues, the social issues and stuff. That's not for me. My mind is always looking for something that helps me have greater meaning in my life. And I believe that that meaning is the firewall. I believe that the truth that we seek, Jesus said, know the truth and it shall make you free. If you are looking to know the truth, that is what erects that protective barrier against you and the outside world, so that when you see something coming in and you know it's not the truth, it just doesn't get in. You go, that's not the truth. That's just not for me. All right. Baron, you know what? We are out of time for today. I'm hoping that I will get you to join me for the entire show on Wednesday, and we can go more into all of these great topics. So thank you for being here, my friend Baron.
It is always so good to be with you, David.
Always thank you so much.
From this enlightened, elevated, and uplifted.
Blessings to you, my brother. That's it for today. Tomorrow, Patrick J. Kelly, country lawyer, will be with us, and FHU.com for the reckoning information. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Perilous World Radio.